Okay, so I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Dr. Kimberly Mitchell at the University of New Hampshire. We don't have any conflicts to declare, but I would like to acknowledge our funding from the NICHD, as well as appreciate our study team, which was pretty diverse, and then, of course, the study participants themselves. It was an involved survey, so I appreciate their time. So we all know that young people are online, right? And they do a lot of stuff online, but most of it has to do with sort of communicating with other young people and exploring their identity and sort of just figuring out who they are and where they fit in this world. And so it makes sense that part of that would be exploring their sexuality online. And there has been some research to sort of understand what's happening there. Back in the day when some young people were using chat rooms, there was a study that suggested that young people were exploring their sexuality in chat rooms. And certainly more recently, there's been quite a bit of interest in this idea of sexting, which is taking sexual photos of yourself and uploading them online or sending them via text messaging. But what's interesting about the literature is that there doesn't seem to be much at all about understanding how young people, whether, and if so, how young people are meeting sexual partners online and having sex with them offline, and if so, what that looks like from a sexual risk perspective. There has been quite a bit of literature that has looked at adult men who have sex with men and what risk factors are associated with meeting online sex partners. The data are really mixed, but mostly it seems like those who meet people from online venues are more likely to engage in risky sexual behaviors in general. So it's not like they don't use condoms with those online, but they do use condoms with those offline. Then in general, it's sort of a marker for risky sexual behavior among adult men who have sex with men. How that relates to adolescents and non-men who have sex with men is really not well understood. So we conducted a teen health and technology study. We went into fields in August of 2010 and closed January of 2011. We got IRB approval from all three of our partner IRBs, including our IRB and the University of New Hampshire and the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network's IRBs. We had parental permission waived because we asked a lot of sensitive questions, particularly around sexual orientation, and had there been unintentional disclosure, it's possible that that could have placed them in harm's way. So we did get permission waived. Eligibility criteria are really quite broad. You basically just had to be within our age range, which was 13 to 18, live in the United States, and agree from an informed assent perspective to take part. We used two different sampling strategies. We worked with Harris Poll online. At one point, they had 4 million members. I don't know what the membership is at this point. But we randomly identified young participants within their panel. And so because they're randomly identified, the self-selection bias is attenuated quite a bit. We have almost 4,000 respondents from them. And then GLSEN did outreach efforts through emails and Facebook ads to provide an oversample of LGBT youth so that we would have sufficient numbers to do sub-analyses. There's a lot of complicated weighting on the back end, and I can go into it further if you guys are interested. But essentially what we did is we took the Harris sample, weighted it to the national demographic characteristics of 13 to 18-year-olds here in the United States, and then identified youth who were LGBT within the Harris sample, treated them as basically indexed participants, and then weighted the GLSEN participants to the LGBT sample in the Harris sample so that way we can combine the data and also hypothesize that the data will behave as if they were nationally representative. Survey was done online. The median survey length for the Harris folks was 23 minutes and for GLSEN folks was 34 minutes, and that's because we asked a lot of follow-up questions that were LGBT specific. So today I want to talk about two main research questions. So the first question is, how many adolescents 13 to 18 years of age are actually meeting sexual partners online? Is this a thing, or is it really not that common? And then the second question is, does it matter, right? So that we can have moral ideas about what that does or does not mean, but from a public health perspective, does it matter? Are there indications, associations with risky sexual behavior? So we asked about 4 different types of sexual behavior. We didn't put names on it. We were very behaviorally specific. So we said, have you ever had oral sex? We mean stimulating the vagina or penis with the mouth or tongue when you wanted to. We were very particular to make sure that we were talking about consensual sex, because that's obviously separate from victimization. Have you ever had sex with another person that involved a finger or sex toy going into the vagina or anus when you wanted to? Have you ever, when you wanted to, had sex where a penis went into a vagina? And the reason why we didn't say, have you ever had vaginal sex when a penis goes into a vagina, is because then that suggests that you can only have vaginal sex when a penis is involved, which means lesbians can't have sex with each other. And the last question was, have you ever, when you wanted to, had sex where someone's penis went into your anus, as well as have you ever, when you wanted to, had sex where your penis went into someone's anus? Confusing, but basically insertive and penetrative. Receptive, and we're all on the same page. I'm going to move on. All right. And then we asked about sexual orientation. We said, below is a list of terms that people often use to describe their sexuality or sexual orientation. How would you describe your sexuality or sexual orientation? It was a check all that apply, and they had 8 different options. For this particular analysis, what we did is we looked at youth who endorsed straight heterosexual exclusively. We did have some kids who said straight and then checked some other boxes. So here we'll be looking at youth who endorse just straight or heterosexual versus all other youth. And so this is what our sample looks like. We've got, after data cleaning, 5,680 young people between the ages of 13 and 18. 4 different groups, so male non-LGB, female non-LGB, male gay bisexual, female lesbian bisexual. That should be an LB, not LG. So in general, on average, our kids are about 15 and a half years of age. We have about 3 and 4, 2 and 3 young people are white, so we're actually skewing a little bit less than the national average on white, and a little bit higher, particularly for male, gay, bisexual, for Hispanic ethnicity, and right there at the national average for the rest for Hispanic. We asked young people to sort of self-appraise whether or not their household income was average, above average, low average, and about 1 in 4, 1 in 3 said that they were living in a household below average household income. We have about 40% of non-LGB young people living in a small town rural setting, and about 1 in 3 LGB, and that's because actually when we look at it, LGB youth are significantly less likely to live in a small town rural setting. That's probably more to do with sort of structural issues and feelings of safety about identifying in those ways when you're in such a small space. So, from a population perspective, if you ask young people whether or not, and we're really just looking at the 2 most recent sexual partners, that covers the vast majority of our young people who are sexually active, but there are some young people who have had more than 2 partners, so if it's possible that they had a sexual partner that they met online back in the day, and that would not be represented here. But that said, we have 5% of female, lesbian, and bisexual youth who have met one of their 2 most recent sexual partners online, 11% of LGB males, 2% of female non-LGB, and 2% of male non-LGB. So that's at the population level. When you look at 13 to 18-year-olds, that's about the percentage of how many young people have met a partner online. When we just look at those who have had sex, rates go up as you would expect, but still we've got 11% of female LGB, 14% of male LGB, 9% of female non-LGB, and 7% non-LGB having an online sex partner. So it's really just not that common. It's not happening that frequently at all. And I think it's also really interesting how similar the rates are across sexual orientation identity. So there's a lot happening on this slide, mostly just because there's a lot of words. but basically, this is looking at whether or not you used a condom the last time you had sex. And these are our 4 groups that we're now well familiar with: LGB males, LGB females, non-LGB males, non-LGB females, and then whether or not you met your partner not online, otherwise known as in person, or online. So offline is left, online is right, across. Basically, for non-LGB males, those who met their partners in person were significantly more likely to use a condom at last sex, so 85% versus 45% who used a condom with a partner they met online. That's the only statistically significant difference here. You do see similar but non-significant trends for both LGB males and LGB females, and quite similar rates of condom use for females, irrespective of where they met the most recent partner. I would point out, too, that overall, rates of condom use are suboptimal. when we've got about 50% of LGB males reporting condom use irrespective of where they meet their partner, we have some work to do. And that for LGB females, this is anal and vaginal sex, we've still got only about 50% of our LGB females using condoms. So we also asked about concurrent sexual partners. So you're in a, you're having sex with one person, and have you had sex with another person? So that could be interpreted as group sex, or just you're having sex with one person one day and another sex with another person the next day. Here we see that those who have LGB males who have met an online partner are significantly more likely to also report concurrent sexual partners. We have a non-significant trend for LGB females. But not a whole lot going on for the non-LGB youth. And the last measure we had was whether or not they knew their partner, their most recent partner, had ever had a sexually transmitted infection. And the red is no, and so overwhelmingly, overall, no matter where the young person met this person, their partner, they said no, this person has never had an STI. The blue, however, is I don't know. And overwhelmingly, irrespective of where they met this person, there's an important minority who really don't know, which is not that surprising because it's really not a very comfortable conversation to have. But I think, again, it's an important call to us. It's really clear where our work, where there's work that needs to be done with our young people. But none of this is statistically significant. You're no more or less likely to say that your partner had an STI, whether or not you met them online or offline. So certainly there's a lot of limitations with these data. These are self-report, so it's possible that some of our young people did not accurately report their behaviors. There's also the issue of representativeness, that our assertion that these data behave as if they're nationally representative is really based upon the weighting, and so it would be good if our findings could be replicated before we say X percent definitely do these things or not. And it's important to note also that our sexual risk measures are the most recent partner, and the online measure is the two most recent partners. So it's possible that, for example, they met their most recent partner offline, used a condom, but the second most recent partner was offline. And, you know, they were discordant. So with all of that said, I think it's important to acknowledge and to see that meeting partners online, so it does appear that meeting partners online is somewhat more common for LGB youth, but even then, we're talking about 11% or fewer. So it's really just not that common overall. And that from a sexual health education perspective, I think it is important to start including these types of scenarios in education just so that the content is more relevant and resonant, but not to the exclusion of in-person scenarios, because I think you can definitely go overboard in trying to sort of be really super relevant, and we're talking about, you know, meeting people online, and it's happening, but not to the point, like, we just can't get stuck there in our content. I think also that findings don't support a hypothesis of risky sex associated with online partnership, but that overall there are concerns about risky sexual behaviors, particularly around condom use and conversations about sexually transmitted infections. Thank you very much. It did not include mobile apps, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Example. So did you give any of that, any thought process to that, of why, like, you know, just because you wanted to, doesn't mean that's so consensual. So,
right.
About that when you're forming questions at all?
No, we do have a separate study that looks particularly at sexual violence perpetration among adolescents. It's definitely an understudied area. We know that sexual violence emerges in adolescence, so it's a very important topic. But for the purposes of understanding online sexual partners and whether or not that relates to online sexual risk, I think that perhaps disentangling whether or not it was perpetration versus other types of sex is perhaps outside the scope of that particular inquiry. Yeah.
Okay. Did you by chance look at like what it meant when they said they met their partner online, whether it was a dating website that they were, you know, saying they were 18 to be on versus like Facebook connection, and if that differed among subgroups?
So the question is, did we ask where online they met the person? We did not. You know, there were so many questions and so many follow-ups that we really just asked, where did you meet this person, and included online, at school, you know, religious organization, other places. So it absolutely could be a dating site versus Facebook versus, you know, some other place, and that might relate to a differential risk. Yeah, so we did ask about age, but it's a little bit tricky because we didn't want to get into mandated reporting issues because we've got under 18. So we basically said, is this partner younger? By younger, we mean a year or less, same age, or older? By older, we mean a year or more older. And there is some indication, and if I'm remembering correctly, I think it's LGB males particularly that are more likely to be meeting older men, or older, at least by a year, partners online.